You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Rebecca Eaton, Masterpiece executive producer. Season 4 of the Emmy award-winning Downton Abbey gets underway this weekend in the United States. One of the other fun things about this program is the time period. As we talked earlier, there's a lot going on in this time period. But with all of our technology and gadgets and things now, it's kind of fun to harken back, if you will, to simpler times. And we've got a great clip here of, you know, we've talked about Mrs. Patmore, who runs the kitchen. She's a bit traditional. And Daisy, who perhaps, like our own day, much young people, much more apt to embrace new technology. And here we have a clip of Lady Edith's purchase of a mixer.
But why would we need it?
It's a mixer. It beats eggs and whips cream and all sorts.
You and I would do that.
And we'd be glad not to, thank you very much. Did Lady Edith say why she got it?
Oh, her ladyship asked her to.
She wants to save us a bit of elbow grease.
I don't understand. Before too long, her ladyship could run the kitchen with a woman from the village. What with these toasters and mixers and such like, we'd be out of a job.
I want to try it.
Then on your own head be it.
I love Daisy. I want to try it. I want to try it.
Yeah. Very fun.
And she does.
Yeah. And but you see Mrs. Patmore's point of view. They're going to put us out of a job with this new technology.
Yeah, watch out. Yeah. They're not going to need us. Yeah. It's very interesting. I don't know if you remember the in an episode, previous episode, I don't remember who was watching to see the electricity coming out of the socket. Mm. Or else, I can't remember if she was trying to smell it or see it or thought it was dangerous.
Yeah. That's so fun. That's a lot of fun. There's, of course, a lot of other great programs under the Masterpiece banner. And we had that name change from Masterpiece Theater to Masterpiece. Mm. Did anything else change besides the name?
The programming did not change because what we discovered is that people loved the programming, but they were being kind of scared off by what might have been old-fashioned about the name or the open. Maybe they were confused. They never knew what would be on. Would it be a mystery? Would it be Jane Tennyson, Prime Suspect, Jane Austen, Jane Eyre? So we reorganized when we would broadcast the types of programming, classic and mystery. We changed the graphics in the open, took off the name. Gillian Anderson came on 1 year as our host, kind of as a guest, mm-hmm. and then we had Laura Linney doing much, much briefer introductions to get right to the drama. Then we started doing a lot of social media stuff and getting the word out about what we were doing that way, appealing to a younger audience. It worked.
Yeah.
Because even before Sherlock and Downton Abbey, which have been our two big hits, the audiences started to grow and we started getting a lot more attention and people saw what we were trying to do and responded. So it was very gratifying. Yeah.
And it seems like, it seemed like the demographic probably was a bit older when it was Masterpiece Theater.
Yeah.
Is that right? And it does seem that there are a lot of young people. I mean, when we do some of these events, we do a Downton Abbey event that we're going to be doing this weekend as well. And it's amazing how many young people not only are into the program, but, I mean, as you say, show up in costume and, you know, are really huge fans.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think it appeals. I mean, I'm not sure. Jane Austen appeals to these younger women, but Downton appeals to younger women and younger men. Mm-hmm. The number of younger women, the size of the audience for Downton 3 was 700% higher than of that age group for the PBS primetime average. I'm not saying that particularly well, but many more young people were watching Downton than usually watch PBS. I mean, that's not to say that all of a sudden the average age of our viewer is 25 at all. I mean, our viewers, our loyal audiences are by and large older people. Mm-hmm. But young people, when they discover the shows that they are about often, they're about family and love and jeopardy and romance or murder or betrayal or with great costumes mm-hmm. and cars. They really are very drawn to them. I think it's a question of getting the word out and getting people into the shows.
Yeah. How are the hosts chosen? You just mentioned Laura Linney, who's doing mm-hmm. it now. And we've had, you know, a handful of hosts over the years. How are you?
You should read the book.
I know. I know. You talk about Alistair Cook in the book.
But, yes, yeah. There's a lot of this in the book because it was actually so interesting when we went from Alistair Cook to Russell Baker. That whole process of that was really pretty much fun. Thousands of people, because the word went out that Alistair was leaving, and thousands of people showed up. I mean, sent in their resumes or tapes, and some really odd people. It would be perfect, and some fairly big names. And that finding Russell, what is a story in itself, because he originally turned it down. Russell Baker, who was a columnist for the New York Times and had written his own memoir, he originally said, you know, absolutely not. Only a fool or a suicidal maniac would follow Alistair Cook. Mm-hmm. I want to be the guy who follows the guy who follows Alistair Cook. This is going to be a very hard job, very big shoes to fill. It is the way we do it is not particularly scientific. It's a lot of brainstorming among us and the staff. And, you know, we have a publicist in Los Angeles who kind of knows who's interested in Masterpiece, who might be interested in this kind of work, and we do a little research that way and then make the ask. And Laura Linney she had done some work for public television years ago. She did Tales of the City, and she believes in public television. She has worked with a lot of British actors, so she got it instantly, as did Alan Cumming. I have to brag and say Alan Cumming was my idea exclusively because I had seen him in Cabaret when he was the MC and thought he was just magic and thought he would be just the right kind of quirky, touching fit for mystery with our Edward Gorey graphics on it. And he said, yes, definitely, yeah, sure. And that's before he became Eli Gold in The Good Wife.
Yeah, no, he's
such
perfect.
A chameleon. Yeah. He can be that, then he can be the downtown Alan Cumming. That's the real Alan Cumming. He lives in New York and is very much a downtown guy. And then he can be this kind of elegant, witty performer that he is for us.
Yeah, and I have to say, first time I saw Laura on that, I went, how did she get that job?
Well, we asked.
Yeah.
How.
Yeah.
She's great.
She
does it, you know, we tape her about once a year, and we can do all of them in one session in Boston and put her in a bunch of elegant black clothes.
Nice, yeah. All right, so talk about your meeting Alistair Cook.
Oh, well, let's see. I met him first. Well, I was sitting on the couch in my nightie, and he was introducing upstairs downstairs on TV. And then when I met him, I was his boss. And I had been hired, and he came up from New York to do his taping, and we met briefly. And he was brisk, and I discovered that is how Alistair was when he's working. You know, he had a lot. He memorized all his introductions, and some of them were 4 minutes long. Mm. So he didn't have a lot of time for small talk, and he didn't actually have a lot of time for small talk even when he wasn't working. He had a lot of time for big talk. He loved good conversation. Cocktail hour with Alistair was the best because he was one of the great 20th century journalists. He had known and written about the great and the good both here and in England. He could do terrific imitations of Winston Churchill and FDR and Queen Elizabeth. And he never forgot anything. He told terrific stories. And he liked to talk, but if he had someone around who knew more than he did about a subject, he loved to learn. Mm. So he became a very dear friend. He was married to a woman named Jane White Cook, and she was an artist, a painter, and she was kind of the heart of the family, and he was the brains, and together they were the soul. It's hard to describe it, but she was the one who would ask about she would ask personal things and make the personal connection. And Alistair, being an Englishman of a certain age, it wasn't necessarily in his repertoire, which didn't mean he didn't care, but he would never ask a personal question. Jane was American, and she would.
Yeah.
And I loved them. Yeah. I really did.
Yeah, fabulous memory, as you're saying. And I read that he really liked, you know, some of the shows like Jeopardy. And
he kept himself sharp.
And you don't talk during those shows.
No, it was his routine at cocktail hour. They lived on Fifth Avenue on the east side overlooking the park, and you'd arrive for cocktails, and Alistair would pour giant cocktails, and then you'd sit down and watch Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. Evening news, Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. And you do not talk during the news. You're paying attention. This is back in the Tom Brokaw days.
Right.
And I think it's how he kept his brain agile. He would just give it little tests. And, you know, and this is when he was 89 years old.
Wow.
He was playing these games. Yes. He was a terrific reader. He read a lot of the day. He would get up late morning and play jazz piano, have a breakfast, read, do his writing, he did BBC Letter from America. He would do his taping. And then cocktail hour would come, dinner, and then he liked to go out clubbing.
Oh my goodness.
Which a different kind of club. A jazz club.
Right.
He and Jane used to go down into Midtown Manhattan and hear some, he loved jazz, and hear some music, and, you know, home and read, and, it was a whole different kind of life.
Right, exactly. Well, we had mentioned earlier at first Masterpiece passed on Downton Abbey. So what is it you look for when you're choosing a program?
It's quite subjective. A Masterpiece classic, obviously. The time, the atmosphere. Okay, that if it passes that hurdle, then we begin to read. And what I look for is a story with a central character or characters that you really care about what happens to them. Really care about them. And like any good story, something is going to happen to them. They're going to go on a journey. There's going to be jeopardy, and you can't stand to be not on that journey.
Mm-hmm.
I look for dialogue, which is believable, accurate to the times, smart, understated. So a plot like a freight train, really good dialogue, characters you can care about. And that's just the beginning, and then there's the production team, because you can have all that, but if you don't have a director who knows how to cast, get the right people in the right parts, and a production designer to really make you believe that you're living in Downton Abbey or that you're in a village in England or even in the Thames Valley Police, you know, Endeavour, we're now doing on Mystery, the Young Morse, it's called Endeavour, in the 60s in Oxford. You have to really believe you're there to do that magic thing that period drama does, which is time travel, takes you somewhere else into another world, and you are really there. You know, the sky looks different, the way people eat and drink, and you just want to be there with them. So that's a rough description of a very unscientific process.
Yeah. So I would imagine that the success of Downton Abbey is probably one of the biggest surprises. But aside from that, over the 28 years that you've been doing Masterpiece, is there something that comes to mind that just really surprised you?
Surprised me. I think the success of the complete Jane Austen, we did about 5 years ago, we put all the Jane Austens together. Jane Austen only wrote 6 books. And we put the television versions of them together in a series. And the Jane Austen fanatics who came out really surprised me.
Yeah.
The Jane Austen Society of North America, JASNA, has a huge following. And they get the word out, and the viewers show up. I was quite impressed with that. I've been surprised by how often the Academy, the Emmy Academy, has recognized British actors. You know, will be nominated. Diana Rigg has won an Emmy, and Helen Mirren, John Gilbert, you know, they'll do a supporting role or they'll do a guest part, and the Academy just loves British actors. Yeah. And now you look and see Hugh Laurie and Damian Lewis, for instance, coming over and being British, although I don't think Hugh Laurie ever won an Emmy for House.
Just in the last like 30 seconds or so that we have, the book, is it a memoir? Would it really be a memoir?
It is Masterpiece's memoir over its 42-3-year history. And my story, I was reluctant to do that at first, but they twisted my arm and said, no, people might want to know how a woman in the late 20th century, early 21st, could manage a life and family and a high-powered job. Mm. So I said, okay, I'll try to remember. Mm. So there's a lot of that story, too.
All right, I am going to read it. Making Masterpiece, 25 Years Behind the Scenes at Masterpiece Theater and Mystery on PBS. Rebecca Eaton is the Masterpiece executive producer. We're looking forward to season 4 of Downton Abbey. Rebecca, thanks so much for taking the time to
it's been great,
take a
Mindy,
peek
thank you.
Season with us. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.